Close your eyes and imagine a place where stories drift on the breeze like the rhythm of steel pan drums, where each grain of sand carries memories of resistance, renewal, and joy. Antigua is more than turquoise beaches. It's a living storybook of Caribbean soul. Step beyond the postcard and into the heartbeat of an island where enslaved ancestors built sugar empires with blood, yet left behind a culture of brilliance, flavor, and sound. Carnival here is not just a celebration. It's a ritual of survival. A Sunday barbecue is not just a meal. It's family, music, and community under the open sky. And behind every pastel wall in St. John's is a hidden voice, painting, weaving, or drumming its truth. This is not just travel. This is cultural immersion. This is the Antigua the tourists never see. But you're about to. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, Roots of a Nation. History in Stone and Sand. Antigua greets the morning with a hush, the kind of silence that feels ancient. Before the cruise ships pull into St. John's Harbor, before the roosters finish their second crow, there is a sacred stillness across the island's east coast. It's here, near Paris Village, that the land holds its most haunting memory, the stone ruins of Betty's Hope. Betty's Hope isn't the kind of place that shouts for your attention. There are no souvenir stands or tour buses waiting at the gate. What greets you is quiet. Two giant stone windmills stand like ghosts above the sugar fields, one partly restored, the other leaning with age. Their limestone bodies are streaked with moss and sun-bleached cracks. But inside these ruins is the root of Antigua's story, a painful, resilient legacy carved in stone and silence. Built in 1650 by the British colonizers, Betty's Hope was one of the island's first sugar plantations. Its name, ironically soft and sweet, came from the daughter of Governor Christopher Keenel. But there was no hope here for the people who worked its soil. By the 1700s, over 400 enslaved Africans labored on this land, cutting cane by machete under the punishing sun, hauling it in competition. Calypso tents rise at the edge of town, where singers face off in lyrical combat. These are not love songs. They are sharp, clever, often political. The reigning monarch, Big Red, delivers a song about corruption, the high cost of living, and broken promises. The crowd roars with every punchline. At Panorama, the steel pan orchestras gather. Dozens of players, from teenagers to elders, stand in formation under the stars. The pans gleam under spotlights, some still bearing the burn marks of last-minute tuning. When the conductor raises his hands, a silence falls. Then the first note strikes, and the air itself vibrates. The melody is not just heard. It is felt in your ribs, your spine, your throat. Each song tells a story, sometimes slow and sad, sometimes furious and fast. And when they finish, the audience erupts, not just with applause, but with pride. But nothing prepares you for the grand parade. It happens on the final 2 days, Carnival Monday and Tuesday. From early morning until long after nightfall, thousands of masqueraders flood the streets in dazzling costumes. Feathers, beads, rhinestones, and flags blur into a kaleidoscope of movement. The colors are not random. Red for fire, blue for freedom, green for growth, gold for ancestral pride. Each band tells a different story of gods and goddesses, of migration and homeland, of modern struggle and ancient resilience. You follow a group called Spirit of the Soil. Their theme, reconnection. Their bodies painted to resemble roots. Their headpieces like branching trees. A mother dances with her young daughter in matching outfits. A man on stilts twirls above the crowd, his laughter echoing like a horn. Elders wave from chairs along the roadside, their eyes filled with knowing. You find yourself crying, not from sadness, but from awe. Amid all this, food stands never stop sizzling. Jerk pork, roasted corn, snow cones and a rainbow syrup, and endless bottles of ting and carib beer pass from hand to hand. Strangers become friends. Friends become family. Everyone belongs. And then, just as the second day winds down, just as your feet can't take one more step, a quiet moment comes. The sun dips behind St. John's Cathedral. The streets hush. And from somewhere within the crowd, a conk. Shell sounds. It is not part of the program, but it is always there. A signal. A blessing. A reminder. Carnival is not about costumes or contests. It is not a performance for others. It is a mirror held up to a people who have survived and who now shine defiantly, beautifully. As night falls, fireworks explode in the sky. The final soca truck rumbles into the distance. The dancers slow. The drums fade, but the rhythm never leaves. It lingers in your skin, in your ears, in your soul. Because Antigua's carnival is not something you attend. It's something you carry with you, long after the paint is washed away. Chapter 5, Sundays in the Sun. Community and Faith. Sunday in Antigua doesn't begin with an alarm clock. It begins with the sound of hymnals rising from the hills. As the sun peaks over the eastern coast, the island wakes not with noise, but with reverence. Church bells ring across St. John's, Liberta, and All Saints. They echo off hills, dance across rooftops, and settle like blessings in the morning air. Faith in Antigua is not an afterthought. It is part of the rhythm of life, a shared breath between neighbors, families, and generations. It's seen in white dresses pressed the night before, in crisp shirts hung by the window to catch the dawn breeze, in Bibles placed carefully on wooden tables, and it's felt, most of all, in the music. You step into a small Baptist church in Potter's Village. The building is modest, a tin roof, wooden pews, and open windows letting in the scent of hibiscus and rain-damp earth. But the spirit inside is vast. Voices rise, soft at first, then full. The choir leads with a traditional spiritual, rich with soul and memory. We've come this far by faith. The lead singer, an elder woman with silver-streaked braids, closes her eyes and lifts both hands. The congregation joins in, swaying gently. You don't need to know the words. The feeling is enough. Testimonies follow, not of perfection, but of survival. A fisherman gives thanks for safe harbor after a storm. A young woman celebrates her father's recovery from illness. A child recites a verse he memorized the night before, proud and trembling. The pastor speaks with warmth and fire. His voice soars, dips, and soothes like a calypso melody. He speaks of hope, of forgiveness, of togetherness. And then silence, a pause. And you realize, in this simple room, faith is not just practiced. It is lived. After service, the community spills into the street. Women hug and whisper. Children run barefoot in their Sunday clothes. Men shake hands, trade news, and argue over cricket scores. Some gather around a car trunk, already opening cold bottles of ginger beer and passing out coconut drops wrapped in wax paper. This is not just fellowship. It is kinship. By midday, the island shifts again, from spirit to sun, from sermon to celebration. You head south, toward the shores of Galleon Beach, where Sunday becomes a kind of open-air homecoming. The road dips into a curve lined with flamboyant trees, their orange blossoms fluttering like confetti. The beach stretches ahead, golden sand, turquoise water, and a sky that feels endless. Families gather early, claiming shaded spots under sea grape trees. Coolers thump into the sand. Folding chairs unfold like rituals. Children squeal as they rush into the sea, tossing inflatable rings and splashing each other with glee. But it's the smell that gets you first. Grills fire up across the beach. Smoke rises from jerk pits and charcoal drums. The scent of marinated chicken, pork, and fish mixes with roasted corn and caramelized plantains. Pots of rice and peas bubble quietly. A woman stirs curry goat over a portable stove, humming a gospel tune. You're invited to sit. No questions asked. No introductions needed. Eat, man. You look hungry, someone says, handing you a paper plate. You taste flavors that feel like memory. Peppered vinegar, ginger root, thyme-soaked gravy. The food is hot, the breeze is cool, and laughter fills the gaps between every bite. Teenagers dance barefoot to dance hall, booming from portable speakers. Aunties sip rum punch in oversized sunglasses. Elders talk politics in the shade, fanning themselves with folded newspapers. Somewhere, a spontaneous domino game starts, the slaps on the table punctuated with cheers and mock insults. But Sunday doesn't end here. Not yet. As the sun begins to dip toward the western horizon, a crowd begins to migrate up the steep hill to a legendary overlook called Shirley Heights. You make the climb, either by car or by foot, winding through a canopy of tropical trees until the view opens. And then, there it is. English Harbor spreads out below like a postcard brought to life. Sailboats drift gently. The water glows with gold and sapphire. The sun paints everything it touches. At the Shirley Heights lookout, the Sunday sunset barbecue is more than an event. It's an experience. A steel pan band plays as people arrive. Locals, tourists, elders, young couples, barefoot children. Everyone comes for the same reason, to witness the magic of the moment. The music begins slowly, building like a tide. Calypso standards shift into soca. The crowd begins to sway. Some dance. Others just close their eyes and let the rhythm wash over them. Vendors serve rum cocktails in plastic cups, fresh grilled ribs and vegetable skewers, banana fritters dusted in powdered sugar. Smoke from the grills mixes with the ocean air. You find a seat on a stone wall and watch the sun sink. It feels sacred. As darkness falls, the lights of English Harbor flicker below. Conversations deepen. A young man proposes to his girlfriend beside you. Cheers erupt. Strangers clap. She cries. In this moment, suspended between land and sea, sound and silence, faith and food, you understand what Antigua means when it says Sunday is for family. Because here, family doesn't mean blood. It means belonging. Chapter 6, Hidden Hands, Artisans of Antigua. 2,000 words, omniscient narration, creative and reverent tone. Walk through the streets of St. John's and you'll see it, not in the storefronts or the cruise terminal, but in the corners, the courtyards, the shadows between the tourist attractions. Art. Not mass-produced souvenirs. Not imported trinkets. But true Antiguan craftsmanship, shaped by hand, etched with memory, and born from struggle, pride, and imagination. Antigua's art isn't flashy. It doesn't announce itself. It waits. And when you see it, truly see it, it speaks volumes. You begin your journey in a quiet back street behind Market Street. There's a single blue door, barely marked. A small wooden sign swings overhead. Jules and Sons, drum makers since 1952. Inside, it smells of sawdust and citrus oil. Light spills through high windows onto rows of wooden shells, goat skins, and carefully stacked hammers. Jules, the eldest of the sons, is bent over a workbench, fitting a hide over a newly carved drum shell. "Most people want the music," he says without looking up, "but don't think about the hands that build the sound." He speaks softly, but his fingers work with fierce precision. He shows you how the wood is chosen. From breadfruit trees for bass, from mahogany for tone. how the goatskin is stretched, soaked, and dried just right, how every rope knot matters. It's not just construction, it's ritual. Jewel tells stories of carnival bands who've marched to his drums, of funerals and weddings that carried his sound, of the time he built a djembe for a school in Ghana, a gift from Antigua to the ancestors. These hands, he says, lifting them, rough and strong, carry more than skill. They carry stories. You leave with a deep, earthy scent of wood in your nose and the sound of a quiet rhythm still beating in your chest. Your next stop is near the docks, where you find a colorful courtyard filled with canvases, easels, and bursts of painted fabric flapping in the breeze. This is Valerie's art yard, part studio, part gallery, part sanctuary. Valerie herself is tall and regal, with paint smudges on her arms and a necklace of sea glass around her neck. She works barefoot, her sarong streaked with color. Her paintings are bold, faces of women with eyes like storm clouds, sugar mill ruins draped in vines, boys dancing barefoot in the rain. Every brushstroke carries motion, emotion, resistance. I paint what people forget to look at, she says, the shadows, the edges, the truth that doesn't smile for tourists. You spend an hour with her, watching her mix colors on an old ceramic plate. She talks about her great-grandmother who was a market vendor, about the time she sold her first piece for $5 and a pat on the back, about how art saved her from silence after a trauma she never names. She points to one canvas in the corner, a child carrying water uphill, alone. That one's about us, she whispers, all of us, still carrying. When you leave, she hands you a postcard print and says, carry this too, quietly. From there, you're guided toward the village of Seaview Farm, a name both literal and poetic. Here lies one of Antigua's oldest and most respected traditions, pottery. You arrive at Elvie's Pottery, a family operation passed down since the early 1900s. The workshop is outdoors, under a zinc roof, beside a flame-fired kiln built of coral stone. Elvie's daughter, Amara, greets you with hands dusted in clay. She's shaping a coal pot, a traditional Caribbean cooking vessel. You watch as her fingers smooth the rim, her thumbs pressing gently, rhythmically, as if she's shaping breath itself. She tells you how every pot starts from the same clay dug right here in Seaview Farm, how it's mixed with river sand and pounded smooth by hand, how the design, wide belly, thick lip, hasn't changed in centuries. It's not just about cooking, she says. These pots fed generations, during storms, during blackouts, during carnival nights. They're part of our survival. She shows you a cracked pot on the shelf, not for sale. That one, she says, was my grandmother's. It still smells like dumplings when it rains. You sit in silence for a moment. Then she hands you a small bowl, newly glazed. Take it, she says. Every island story needs something to hold it. Later, back in St. John's, you step into a different kind of workshop, one filled with sound. At Pan Revolution Studios, steel pan builders craft instruments that will soon lead parades, play anthems, and echo across the harbor. The air here is filled with the ring of metal, the hiss of torches, the smell of oil and sweat. You meet Kareem, young, sharp-eyed, with grease on his shirt and music in his fingertips. He shows you how oil drums are scorched, and hammered, and shaped into instruments of melody. Every dent has meaning, every surface a note. This is our instrument, he says. Trinidad may have invented it, but Antigua made it sing with her own voice. He lets you tap one, a tenor pan, shimmering in chrome. The sound rings like sunlight, sharp, bright, unforgettable. These pans, he adds, come from scrap, from waste, and look what we make of them. The metaphor isn't lost on you. Before the sun sets, you visit one final artisan. not in a studio, but in a small rum distillery nestled in the hills near Bendel's. Here, tradition is bottled. The master distiller, Miss Bernice, is part chemist, part poet. She walks you past oak barrels, vats of molasses, copper stills. She explains how rum was once the drink of colonizers, but now belongs to the people who built the plantations, not owned them. She pours a sample, dark, spiced, slow. You sip and feel it bloom. Rum carries heat, she says, not just from fire, but from history. Outside, the sky turns amber. You sit under a tamarind tree with your small glass of rum and think of all the hands you've met today. Wrinkled, calloused, painted, scarred. Each one told a story. Each one shaped Antigua in silence, in sweat, in beauty. You realize something profound. Antigua is not just built by history. It is held together by hands. Chapter 7, Under One Sky. Independence and Identity. The stars begin to rise over St. John's before the drums do. But when they come, those first slow, deep rhythms, they don't just announce an event. They awaken a memory, a legacy, a promise made generations ago. Tonight is not an ordinary night. It is independence rehearsal. And though the official holiday isn't until November 1st, the island prepares early, not with formality, but with soul. You arrive at the multipurpose cultural center, tucked between villages just outside the capital. The parking lot is gravel. The lights hum softly, and inside, it feels like the beating heart of a nation preparing to speak. Children in school uniforms rehearse poetry on a small stage. A girl stumbles over the word emancipate. A teacher gently corrects her. They try again. Her voice rises clearer. Behind the curtain, dancers stretch, limbs long, lean, focused. Their bodies move in time with ancestral energy, blending African forms with Caribbean swagger. Each move whispers a story. Each pause holds a truth. A line of boys in khaki pants polish drums. They speak softly, respectfully, as if the instruments are elders. One of them, no older than 10, strikes a note and listens carefully, then again, until it's perfect. It's more than practice. It's devotion. You step outside, drawn by the sound of laughter. A small fire flickers near a food stall where a woman stirs pepper pot stew in a black pot. She's stirring with purpose, humming an old folk tune, eyes watching children run barefoot through grass lit by moonlight. What do you smell? She says without looking up, is history you can taste. She offers you a bowl. It's rich and deep. Cassareep, thyme, cinnamon, slow-cooked beef. But inside that flavor is something more, the comfort of centuries, a home built on the ruins of survival. Across the yard, elders sit in folding chairs lined in a semicircle. They speak in hushed tones, mostly watching, sometimes correcting. One of them, a man named Cyril, gestures for you to sit. He points to the children on stage. Them there, he says, is freedom's proof. You ask what he remembers of 1981, the year Antigua and Barbuda gained independence from British rule. He chuckles. Everything, he replies. The flags, the heat, the tears, the way we shouted our anthem like it would hold the island together. He taps his cane twice on the dirt. And maybe it did. Inside the center, someone begins to sing. The crowd quiets. It's the national anthem, not in perfect harmony, but in real, breathing voices. Everyone stands. Even the children stop their games. You feel something settle over the yard. Something sacred. Then, fireworks. Not for the tourists. Not choreographed or timed to music. Just a few bursts, red, green, gold, over the hilltop. Children cheer. Elders nod slowly. And in that moment, it feels like the entire island is exhaling. But the celebration is just beginning. You travel next to Shirley Heights, the same hilltop where you once watched a Sunday sunset, Tonight, it glows with flags. Strings of red, black, and blue cloth ripple in the breeze. Lanterns swing from iron hooks. The harbor below sparkles like a second sky. A cultural show begins under the pavilion. Folk dancers in Madras skirts stamp their feet in unison. A storyteller takes the mic, an old woman with a voice like gravel and silk. She tells of Anansi the spider, of hurricane season births, of the time her father hit a radio during the British broadcast bans. The crowd laughs, gasps, claps. Every word she speaks is a thread sewn into the nation's flag. Then come the students from the cultural center, now in full costume. They recite poems. They perform choreographed step routines. A group of girls reenact the arrival of emancipation by lantern light. Their movements slow, deliberate, powerful. The youngest child finishes with a single word, free. The crowd stands, not in silence, but in thunderous applause. You look around and realize no one is holding a phone. No one is trying to leave early. Everyone is here, fully, openly, together. A man plays the national anthem again, this time on steel pan. It sounds new, ancient, eternal. The final performance comes from a quartet of drummers who lead the crowd into a chant. It's not rehearsed, yet everyone seems to know it. Their voices rise under the open night. We forward still, no turning back, over and over. We forward still, no turning back, each repetition louder, firmer, more unified. The chant doesn't end. It fades naturally into the music of the wind, into the laughter of cousins reunited, into the silence of stars above an island still becoming itself. You walk down the hill slowly, alone, barefoot in the grass. Somewhere behind you, someone lights a sparkler. It hisses quietly. You look up. The sky above Antigua, clear, deep, endless, reflects back your own wonder. And you understand, Antigua's paradise isn't hidden in its beaches. It's here, in its people, in its purpose, in its pride, in every hand that built, in every voice that rose, in every drum that still plays, under this one sky shared by all, carts and feeding it to the grinding mills. A walk through Betty's Hope today is not just a history lesson, it's a pilgrimage. The air carries the faint smell of rain-soaked grass and distant cane. A local guide, Miss Althea, greets you at the gate with a weathered binder and a firm voice. She has told this story hundreds of times, yet never without reverence. She points to the still-standing windmill and says, "They say it ground more than cane. It ground lives." You follow her into the main yard, where stone foundations trace the outlines of long-gone boiling houses, stables, and a rum distillery. There are no ropes or signs telling you where to stand. You are free to touch the walls, to kneel beside the old sugar troughs. You feel the texture of stone carved by men who had no freedom but left their fingerprints in the mortar. Miss Althea explains how enslaved people here were given 2 sets of clothes per year and were expected to survive hurricanes, crop burns, and brutal overseers. But they still sang, she adds. They still made music, still told stories in their own tongue. And that quiet resistance, is what birthed the culture of Antigua. As you leave the plantation site, the road carries you through Paris Village, where some of the descendants of Betty's Hope laborers now live. You see school children walking with books in hand. You pass a woman sweeping her front step. The colonial past is not erased, but it has been reshaped. What was once a wound is now a scar, healed but never forgotten. Your next stop is the opposite side of the island, English Harbor. Here lies Nelson's Dockyard, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and one of the best-preserved Georgian naval yards in the Caribbean. But don't let the crisp paint and restored architecture fool you. These walls, too, tell stories. In the late 18th century, this dockyard was the stronghold of the British Royal Navy, named after Admiral Horatio Nelson, who, it's worth noting, despised being stationed in the Caribbean, the dockyard served as a base to protect British sugar interests. Sailors worked alongside enslaved shipbuilders, carpenters, and blacksmiths. The harbor became a junction of forced labor, military strategy, and cultural fusion. Today, you walk past these same stone storehouses, now turned into cafes, art galleries, and heritage museums. Young Antiguans served drinks beside the dry docks where their ancestors once toiled. Steel pan music echoes across the harbor, blending strangely and beautifully with the echoes of clanging hammers from centuries past. In the small dockyard museum, you find relics that tie the past to the present: a ship's bell, a slave register, old mariner maps. One plaque reads, "What was used to conquer became the foundation for our pride." That pride now fills the air as you step back into the open courtyard. A group of school children in matching uniforms sit on the lawn sketching the buildings. Their teacher explains how the dockyard became a symbol of reclamation. Where once ships of war were launched, today cultural festivals and sailing weeks unite locals and travelers in celebration of heritage, not conquest. As evening draws near, you travel up to Shirley Heights, a hilltop fortress that once watched for French invaders, now turned into Antigua's most iconic sunset spot. From here, you look down at the sweep of English Harbor, its waters calm and golden under the falling sun. You think of how this island has changed hands. From Amerindian tribes to European empires, from sugar tycoons to Caribbean dreamers. Yet through it all, it has remained defiantly Antiguan. Below you, the dockyard lights flicker on. A soft breeze carries the scent of salt and charcoal from a nearby grill. And as the first notes of a steel pan drift into the sky, you realize this island's roots are not buried. They are sung, they are cooked, they are danced, they are alive in every stone, every meal, every story told beside a fire. And this, you understand, is where the journey truly begins. Chapter 2, Fig Tree Drive, Roads of Rainforest and Rhythm. The road to Antigua's hidden heart begins with a single bend, sharp, unguarded, and overgrown with vines. This is no ordinary road. It's Fig Tree Drive, a winding stretch that cuts through the southwestern mountains of the island like a green vein, pulsing with life. The name is a misnomer. In local dialect, fig means banana, not the figs known elsewhere in the world. So this is the Banana Road, though it offers far more than fruit. It is a living tunnel of breadfruit trees, mango groves, tamarind clusters, and bamboo thickets. And beyond its curves lies a world most tourists never see. You start your journey in Old Road Village, just east of the sleepy coastal town of Johnson's Point. As you drive inland, civilization thins. Fewer concrete homes, more wooden shacks with galvanized roofs, fewer resort vans, more donkey carts and barefoot children chasing chickens in dusty yards. Your driver, Marcus, keeps one hand on the wheel and the other out the window, greeting everyone with a nod or a shout. "Down here," he says, "every face is familiar, or at least treated like it is." The air shifts. Ocean breeze gives way to jungle musk. The sky narrows above you, cloaked by the interlocking limbs of ancient trees. Their leaves filter sunlight into a dancing mosaic on the road. The hum of cicadas grows louder. Every few minutes, Marcus slows down, not for other cars, but for dogs, goats, or an old man selling passion fruit from a wheelbarrow. And then, just as the jungle seems ready to swallow the road, you stop. To the left, barely visible, a small wooden sign reads, "Joyce's Cocoa and Bush Farm. Visitors, welcome." You pull into the clearing. A rooster scurries off. A hammock sways in the breeze. And from behind a large cacao tree comes a woman in a wide straw hat and rubber boots. Joyce, the farmer herself, greets you not with a handshake, but a bowl of cacao pulp, freshly scooped from pods cut just minutes before. "You can spit out the seeds if you can't chew them," she says with a grin, "but the pulp's sweet like sugar." She walks you through her modest property. Banana trees lean under their own weight, pineapples peek from thorny bushes, and soursop hangs low like green hearts. Chickens weave between your feet. A wooden shed holds hanging bunches of drying herbs, lemongrass, sarracy, basil, and neem, the building blocks of Antigua's bush medicine culture. Joyce explains how her grandmother taught her to farm without fertilizer, how she still uses ashes and crushed charcoal to feed the soil, how coconut husks are her irrigation system. "Is not just farming," she says, "is survival with memory." She hands you a leaf and tells you to crush it in your palm. The scent explodes, sharp, herbal, slightly minty. "Jack in the bush," she says, "for fever, for blood, for spirit too." After an hour of stories, tastes, and laughter, she waves you goodbye with the hand still stained with cacao. You drive on, richer than when you arrived, not in wealth, but in knowledge. As the drive continues, the landscape opens up. Hills roll in green velvet. Small churches appear, their steeples peaking above coconut palms. In one yard, a family washes clothes in a basin and waves as you pass. In another, young boys play cricket with a stick and a tennis ball, pausing mid-game to shout a greeting. Eventually, Marcus turns down a gravel path and stops at another modest home, this one open air, with smoke curling up from a stone fire pit in the back. "This is Amos," Marcus says, "best woodcarver in the parish, maybe in all Antigua." Amos is shirtless, lean, with dreadlocks wrapped in a faded bandana. He sits under a tamarind tree, chipping away at a piece of driftwood. His tools are few, a chisel, a hammer, a rasp, but his hands know what the wood wants to be. He shows you masks inspired by African spirits, bowls shaped like sea turtles, and walking sticks crowned with birds and lizards. Each item tells a story. Some are silent, others have words etched in. "No chain can hold a soul. My roots go deeper than slavery." Amos tells you he learned from his uncle, who learned from his grandfather, who used to carve by firelight after cutting cane all day. "I'm not just selling souvenirs," he says. "I'm speaking in timber." As the sun climbs high, you continue along Fig Tree Drive. Roadside stands appear, more vibrant now. Women sell sugar apples, guava, and freshly made tamarind balls rolled in brown paper. One child sells bags of banana chips made from the trees growing just behind him. He beams when you buy two. At a curve overlooking the valley, Marcus stops again, this time not for a visit, but a view. Below you, the land dips into a lush bowl of green. Banana plants stretch for acres. In the distance, you see flashes of rooftops, pink, teal, and yellow. They belong to small inland villages like Sweets and John Hughes, quiet towns where time moves to its own rhythm. From this height, Antigua no longer feels like an island of beaches. It feels like a hidden country within itself. Rainforest Republic ruled by mango trees and rivers of breeze. You descend slowly now, the road curving tighter. You pass Wallings Nature Reserve, where hikers follow old aqueducts and colonial water lines once used to feed sugar estates. You pass a goat tied to a tree beside a handwritten sign, "Fresh cheese available. Ask inside." Soon, the scent of wood smoke and roasted corn grows stronger. You arrive at a roadside cookshop, little more than a tin roof and three benches. But the flavors are world class. The cook, a woman named Aisha, hands you a plate of roast corn dusted with blackened sea salt, a side of coconut bread, and a slice of sweet potato pudding still warm from the oven. "You lucky," she says, grinning. "This batch just done cool." You sit under a flamboyant tree with red blossoms exploding above. The sounds of the rainforest blend with gospel music playing low on a solar-powered radio. For a moment, everything is still. Everything is right. As the journey ends and the road levels out near Liberta Village, Marcus turns to you. "Now you see," he says. "Antigua, not just beach and sun. Antigua is belly. Antigua is bush. Antigua is breath." You smile. You know he's right. Because somewhere along Fig Tree Drive, between a cocoa pod and a carved mask, between the sweat of a farmer and the voice of a tree, you didn't just travel. You connected. Chapter 3. Taste of Tradition. Culinary Heartbeats. In Antigua, food is more than sustenance. It's storytelling on a plate. Every bite carries a memory. Every recipe holds a legacy. And every kitchen whispers a secret passed down through the generations. If you want to understand the spirit of the island, sit at the table and listen. It begins in the early morning when the scent of smoked herring and boiled dumplings slips through the slatted windows of village homes. Children stir awake to the sizzle of okra in cast iron pans. Grandmothers stand barefoot on cool tile floors, stirring cornmeal into boiling water with strong wooden cuckoo sticks, preparing fungi, Antigua's national dish. You find yourself in a modest home in All Saints Village. The woman at the stove is called Miss Merle. Her hands move without hesitation. She lifts the lid on a bubbling pot of salted cod, letting the steam carry the smell of garlic, thyme, and scotch bonnet across the room. She works with rhythm, as though each motion is part of a larger song. And in a way, it is. "Fungi and saltfish," she says, without turning. "That's what raised generations here. Wartime, storm time, happy time. This is what we ate." She shows you how to whisk the cornmeal slowly, folding in the okra until it becomes thick and sticky like dough. Then she drops scoops of it onto banana leaves to cool. Outside, under a tamarind tree, the family gathers, three generations, heads bowed over enamel plates, steam rising in the morning light. The first bite is earthy, soft, and spiced with centuries of fusion. This is not fast food. This is soul food. As the day warms, you travel to Erling's Wharf, where the seaside comes alive with the sound of frying oil, crackling grills, and rhythmic steel pan music. The local seafood festival is in full swing. Stalls line the beach, each draped in bright cloth and proudly flying hand-painted signs. Spicy conch fritters, jerk lobster, grilled snapper with festival. The sea breeze carries it all. Peppery smoke, buttery garlic, sweet coconut. You walk past a grill where red snapper sizzles skin side down, eyes still clear, seasoned with lime, allspice, and secret family blends. Next to it, skewers of octopus twist over open flame. A man in a faded Bob Marley t-shirt waves you over. "You ever tried Dakana?" he asks. You shake your head, and his smile widens. He hands you a warm bundle, wrapped in banana leaf and tied with string. Inside, a steamed dumpling of grated sweet potato, coconut, sugar, cinnamon, and raisins. It's soft, rich, and comforting, like eating a memory you never had. Beside it, he serves salted cod, stewed eggplant, and a slice of golden plantain. "You don't need knife and fork for this," he says. "Just fingers and good company." As you eat by the wharf, boats drift behind you. Fishermen unload baskets of spiny lobster and buckets of whelk. Children run barefoot through puddles, licking sugarcane. Someone starts beating a rhythm on an empty barrel. The food doesn't stop, and neither does the music. Later that afternoon, you follow the winding back roads to a hidden farm on the outskirts of Liberta, where a woman named Sister Helena hosts bush tea, tastings under her mango tree. A table is set with ceramic cups, dried herbs, and handwritten labels: sarracy, fever grass, ginger root, guava leaf. Sister Helena moves slowly, with dignity. She explains how tea is a medicine in Antigua, not just for the body, but for the spirit. Sarissa for cleansing, basil for the nerves, tamarind leaf for the blood. You sip from steaming mugs as she tells stories of healing ceremonies, of women who sang over boiling kettles, of herbal knowledge handed down like prayer. The tea is bitter, sweet, floral, and sharp, each one different, each one alive. By sunset, you arrive at Galleon Beach. The sky glows with amber fire, and the air is thick with barbecue smoke and soca music. It's Sunday, Antigua's sacred day of community and cooking. On the sand, a circle of metal drums forms a makeshift grill. Men turn racks of jerk chicken with gloved hands, brushing on sauce that drips and flares with fire. Women laugh as they fold dough for Johnny cakes, golden fried dumplings that puff and crackle in oil. Kids help stir sorrel juice in giant jugs while licking melted ice cream from their fingers. You meet Dwayne, a self-taught chef who runs a pop-up kitchen every weekend. He gives you a plate of everything: charcoal roasted corn, stewed lentils with pumpkin, curry goat with rice and peas, fried plantain glazed in honey. "This is how we celebrate," he says. "No menu, just family." As you eat, the flavors burst. The heat of jerk balanced by the sweetness of plantain, the earthiness of lentils mellowed by coconut milk, the fire of curry soothed by cold sorrel spiced with cloves and ginger. Dwayne picks up a drumstick, gives it a quick nod of approval, and then tells you the truth. Antigua don't cook by clock. We cook by feeling. The night deepens. The tide rolls in gentle. Steel pans sing under fairy lights strung between palm trees. Children fall asleep in their mothers' laps. Elders sip white rum from chipped enamel cups. And someone brings out a pot of cassava pone, a sticky golden dessert made with root vegetables, brown sugar, and nutmeg. The first bite is warm and chewy, with hints of molasses and wood smoke. You lean back, full, not just in body, but in spirit. Each flavor you tasted today was more than food. It was heritage. It was survival. It was celebration. It was Antigua. And tomorrow, it will begin again. Chapter 4, Rhythm of Liberation, The Spirit of Carnival. The streets of St. John's don't sleep during Carnival. They vibrate. From the very first beat of a steel pan to the final shimmer of sequins in the Grand Parade, Antigua's Carnival is not just a celebration. It is the living echo of resistance, survival, and transformation. Born from the ashes of enslavement, it is a declaration. We are still here, and we are proud. It began in 1957, officially, that is, but its soul is older, rooted in the joy that followed Emancipation Day in 1834. When the chains fell, music rose. Drums beat where shackles once clanked. Dance replaced despair. Carnival was born not in parades, but in the spirit of freedom itself. Now, every year in late July, the island erupts in color, rhythm, and motion for 13 straight days. If you visit during this time, prepare for your senses to be overwhelmed, joyfully, unapologetically, completely. Your experience begins in the blue-gray hours before dawn. It's Jouvert morning. You find yourself standing in the center of town, surrounded by a crowd that feels like a living ocean, swaying, unpredictable, unstoppable. The air is humid, thick with the scent of body heat, coconut oil, and fresh paint. A distant bass begins to pulse like a heartbeat. Then, out of the shadows, they come. Bands of revelers painted in mud, oil, chocolate, and glitter. Some wear horns, others angel wings, most just wear joy. There are no barriers, no stages. Everyone is a performer. Everyone is free. The music thunders from moving trucks, soca, bouillon, calypso, and bashment. Lyrics of protest, love, and liberation echo through narrow streets. You feel the ground shake as bodies move in synchronized chaos. A man pours paint down your back and grins. A woman pulls you into a dance, laughing with her whole face. You lose track of time. By the time the sun climbs above the rooftops, the streets shimmer with paint and sweat. Exhausted, elated, covered in color, you understand. Jouvert isn't a party. It's a purge, a reset, a ritual older than the calendar. But Carnival doesn't stop there. In the days that follow, the island transforms into a theater of artistry and